Welcome to the July 28th closed session meeting of the East Bay MUD Board of Directors. Roll call, Madam Secretary, please.
Director Coleman?
Present.
Director Katz?
Present.
Director Lenny?
Here.
Director McIntosh?
Here.
Director Mellon?
Present.
Director Patterson? Trying to get him on the line, and President Young.
I am here. Okay. Due to COVID-19 and in accordance with the latest Alameda County Health Order, I knew I was forgetting something at the top of that meeting. I thought I had it memorized by now. Current Alameda County Health Orders and the Governor's Executive Order N-2920, which suspends portions of the Brown Act, this meeting will be conducted by teleconference only, and in compliance with these orders, a location has not been provided. These measures will only apply during the period in which state and local public health officials have imposed or recommended social distancing. We'll now move on to public comment. If there are members of the public calling in and you wish to speak on an item on or off of today's closed session agenda, the secretary will take your name after I call you in alphabetical order. You'll have 3 minutes to talk. I can limit the amount of time that you're speaking at my discretion. And the secretary will let you know when it's your opportunity to speak and will also tell you when your time has concluded. I'm actually not going to do the alphabet. Risha, do we have a lot of people on the line or can you tell?
I can't really tell, so we actually should do the alphabet just to see if.
Okay. Is there anybody whose last name begins? I'm going to make it a bigger lump. A through the letter L.
Eric Larson, President, AFSCME Local 444.
Okay. And how about Mary through Zebra?
Joe Pangelinan, Chief Steward, Local 444.
Okay. Sounds like we have two speakers. Is there anybody else for public comment? Okay, sounds like we have two speakers. Madam Secretary, could you do the first speaker, please?
Yes. Eric, your time is starting now.
Thank you, Risha. Good morning, President Young, directors, general manager, and staff. This is Eric Larson, President, AFSCME Local 444. I wanted to convey that we continue to have great concern about the requirement to use personal leave if directed to quarantine due to a potential exposure at work, or the requirement to have 72 hours symptom-free, which effectively adds 3 additional sick days before returning to work after recovery from a potential COVID symptom that could have been as simple as the common cold. Thus far, in our request to provide work from home when the employee is well but cannot report in order to protect our workforce, management has responded that the district will make its best effort to provide work the employee can perform remotely. What this means in practice is that if the supervisor of the work unit can find work from home for the employee, there may be a little bit, a day or two. This is insufficient. The district should make a concerted effort to compile work we can do while we are well but not able to report in order to protect our workforce. We've offered ideas like working for the state or counties as contact tracers if the district can't find work for us. Failing that, we should be placed on paid administrative leave for the time that we are required to stay home in order to protect our workforce. Remember, AFSCME Local 444 represented classifications. We work in the street. We cannot telecommute. We should not be required to use our own paid time off while we are well in order to provide safe working conditions at the district. This is a cost that should be borne by the district as a cost of doing business during this devastating pandemic. This is a cost of providing safe working conditions that should not be borne by our Ask Me Local 444 members. Thank you, board, for your time and consideration.
Thank you, Eric.
Next, we have Mr. Pangilinan, and your time starts now.
Thank you, Risha. Hello, President Young, board members, General Manager Chan. Today, I would like to talk to you about our East Bay Mud janitors. Due to the elevated job-specific risk of COVID-19 exposure in the performance of their work duties, increase in workload and responsibilities, and in recognition of their contribution to district management of the COVID-19 epidemic, we feel all district janitors should be paid a premium of 15% on all standard and overtime hourly pay rates for the duration of the declared COVID-19 global pandemic, retroactive to the date of the initial district declared emergency. We feel that the district janitors are on the front lines of this, and their exposure is absolute in doing their duties. Thank you for your time.
So are you suggesting that the janitors really don't want to do this work and perhaps we should bring in a outside hazmat team to do the work? Is the speaker still there?
Mr. Pangilinan?
I'm here. I couldn't hear that. I'm sorry. What was that? Can you repeat that, please?
Go ahead. Director Melling, can you repeat your question?
Yeah, repeat the question.
All right. So are you suggesting that the janitors don't want to do this work because of the hazard and that it would be better if we brought in a hazmat team to do the work?
That is not what we're suggesting. The janitors here at East Bay Mud are committed to keeping everyone safe, and they are proud of what they do. What we are seeing is several other agencies and private companies are paying hazard pay or premium for their janitorial staff because they have a elevated COVID-19 exposure during their performance of their duties.
Okay, I hear your answer. It just doesn't sound like that's what you asked initially. Thank you.
Okay, I think with that, we will be adjourning to another virtual location to have our closed session meeting, and we'll everybody hang up, and then you respond to the chat, right?
Correct.
We'll reconvene here at 1:15. Welcome to the July 28th regular meeting of the East Bay Mud Board of Directors. Due to COVID-19 and in accordance with the Alameda County Department of Public Health and the State Executive Order N-2920, which suspends parts of the Brown Act, we're going to conduct our meeting today as we have been for the last 5 months by teleconference only. And compliance with these orders, a physical location has not been provided. And these measures will only apply for as long as state and local public health officials have imposed or recommended social distancing. All directors, including myself, are participating via teleconference. Madam Secretary, could you please call the roll?
Director Coleman?
Present.
Katz?
Present.
Lenny?
Here.
McIntosh?
Here.
Mellon?
Present.
Patterson?
Present.
President Young?
I am here. the Sustainability and Energy Committee, as well as the Finance and Administration Committees, met this morning and will report out under item 16. Please join me now for the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the United States of America.
To the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay. We have no announcements from closed session. And before we go to public comment, I'd like to welcome, it looks like, Devin and Great, who is this that's joining us? Is that Grady? With a different, do we have two of our interns? I see it's Devin.
Yes, and then Mateo.
And Mateo. Two of the interns representing East Bay Mud 2020 High School virtual, in first ever virtual, hopefully last ever virtual internship program. Oh, gosh, I've got to go to my speaker notes. Hang on. For the last 30 years, the district has offered summer internships for high school students throughout the service area. These work-based learning experiences occur on-site alongside district staff. However, because of COVID-19 and our subsequent shelter-in-place order, we adjusted quickly and revamped the plan and created the high school virtual internship program, which you get to call VIP on your resume. So that's pretty cool. A total of, we had 31 interns throughout the district representing the following schools and referred by our program partners. So Biotech Partners, College Track of Oakland, Eden Area Recreation Regional Opportunity Occupational Program, Oakland Unified School District, the San Lorenzo Unified School District, West Contra Costa Public Education Fund, and the / West Contra Costa Unified School District. So basically from almost from throughout our school area, our service area. The internship program lasted 5 or 6 weeks and provided students the opportunity to work in project teams of two to investigate a water or wastewater program related to their area of career interest. District staff served as mentors and provided the topics for their interns to study. The students worked on topics related to engineering, customer services, human resources, operations and maintenance, including our pipeline rebuild program.
Participant line muted.
I'm going to have to take that call. and customer service, including our customer assistance program. Two interns, Devin Dean from West Contra Costa Unified and Mateo Garcia from Eden Area Regional Occupational Program, are here with us today and will provide the board with an overview of their projects and the program, and all the other interns are on audio. So take it away, you guys. Great work. I got to talk to Devin last week about the work that he and his partner Grady did on the customer assistance program, and I'm sure you'll all enjoy hearing about it. So without further ado, take it away.
Good afternoon, Board of Directors. My name is Mateo Garcia. I'm a rising junior at Hayward High School. The virtual internship program was very exciting and interesting. I was really excited to have the opportunity to get into the program, particularly because there's a lot to learn and a lot of fields that I could have gone into. I was glad to have an experience working in a field that I enjoy as well. The program was something fun, productive, and insightful that I could do over my summer. The entire thing was made a lot easier by Sophia, who was helpful and able to answer any question that I had for the program. Similarly, my mentor, Michelle Ivy, was incredibly helpful and supportive in assisting my partner and me in developing our project. It helped that I knew my partner, Johnny Wong, before the program started, from being at the same school on the badminton team. My project with Johnny Wong was to advocate for the development and implementation of a district-declared emergency employee board, which is an employee messaging board where employees can ask questions directly to the emergency operations team during a district-declared emergency. For the internship, my partner Johnny Wong and I conducted research on similar employee message boards, other emergency protocols for utilities, potential advantages and disadvantages, and the effects of COVID-19 on workplace communication as a whole. We ultimately produced a comprehensive report detailing everything that we worked on and found information on, as well as the project description and goals. Hopefully next summer's interns can get to work on actually developing this board with our research and work as a foundation. That summarizes my experience, and I'd like to have Devin summarize his experience now. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Devin Din, and I'm a rising senior at Pinole Valley High School. And I joined this internship to learn more about what East Bay MUD offers and how it could point me towards new directions in my post-high school life. I worked with Don Benson. I worked with Don Benson in the customer and community service.
All right, but all you need to work, are you at the fingerprint
place? Marguerite, can you mute?
Okay.
President Young, can you mute your phone, please?
Hang on a second.
Where's the back of the sheet, the set of papers? There are two pieces of paper.
She forgot to mute her.
Can you, is down.
Maybe somebody can text Marguerite.
You do remotely.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, I'll start from the. I worked with Don Benson in the Customer and Community Services Department this summer, where me and my partner Grady were tasked with conducting community outreach and expanding awareness about the Customer Assistance Program and Water Lifeline. The virtual internship program was definitely a new experience for me and other interns, of course, and it allowed us to work with each other with people from various places. Like, I'm from Richmond and my partner was in Oakland, so it allowed us to work together and be able to gain more knowledge and skills about the particular department. I also have a suggestion to add towards the future where us interns can come back and act as many mentors for the interns who need an extra resource at the next internship. And thank you for having us and allowing us for this internship to continue the summer, even with the given situation at this time.
You guys seem very polished at doing this. You must do a lot of on-screen communicating with friends.
Okay. Hey, Doug, can you take over for a few minutes?
Yeah, I was just looking at the agenda here. Cliff, is there anything else that we have? Obviously, we can't give them anything virtually here. But yep. I was just looking to see.
No, that is it.
That's it. All right. Well, thank you very much for joining us and sharing your experience with us. We really appreciate it.
Wait a second, Doug. I think Devin had a really good comment at the end about how they may be able to help in the future. And maybe that can be looked at in future internships.
Absolutely.
There you go.
Absolutely.
Indeed.
All right. Well, then our next item is on to public comment. And
guys.
And Madam Secretary, I'll look to you to maybe help with anyone who is on the line for public comment.
Right. If there are any members of the public calling in and you want to speak on agenda or non-agenda items, I'll take your name and I'm going to call an alphabetical grouping. And if you could state your name, your affiliation, and topic, if applicable. You'll have 3 minutes to speak. However, the Vice President has the option of limiting that time based on the number of speakers. Once I get the list of speakers, I'll state your name, let you know when your time has started and when your time is concluded. If you're not speaking under public comment, please consider muting your phone and also listening along on ebmud.com. Are there any speakers on the phone with the last names beginning A through L?
Yes.
Your name?
Louis Bell.
Mr. Bell.
Hi.
Hello. Anybody else with the last name A through L?
Yes. This is Eric Larson, President of AFSCME Local 444,
And both Lewis and myself are speaking on agenda item 9A. And we have a preferred order of speakers. I would like to speak before Lewis, and then he'll follow up.
Okay.
All right. So if you're speaking on items 9A, we will get to you then. When we get to that item, we'll pull that item off the consent calendar.
Correct. Anybody else on the line with the last names beginning A through L? M through Z? Any speakers on the line with the last names beginning M through Z? Okay, Director Lennon, we have no speakers under general public comment. We can move on to consent.
All right, so we're on to the consent calendar, and I will pull items 9A and 9B. Any other items that anyone wishes to discuss?
Item 12.
Supposed to pull 12.
Item 12, Doug.
Right, I was waiting for Frank. I left enough space to push the mute button. All right, so we'll have, do I have a motion for the rest of the items?
I'll move the items. This is John.
Second. All right, so I have a motion and second to approve items 1 through 8 and 10 and 11.
And 9B, too.
9A, 9B?
No, 9A has been pulled, but 9B was not being pulled by the speakers asking.
Let's just keep them together.
Okay.
Right. So, again, motion on items 1 through 9 and 10 and 11.
1 through 8.
Thank you. 1 through 8, Frank. Keep this accurate. Madam Secretary, if you'll call roll or call for a vote on this by roll call.
Yes. Directors Coleman?
Yes.
Katz?
Yes.
Lenny?
Yes.
McIntosh?
Yes.
Mellon?
Yes.
Patterson?
Yes.
And President Young stepped away. Okay.
All right. So that motion passes unanimously with those present. So let's go ahead to items 9A and 9B. Should we start with public comment? So,
yes.
Eric, you said you had an order that you wanted to have speakers?
Yes, it'd be myself followed by a paving crew foreman, Lewis Bell.
Okay.
All right.
Why don't you go ahead now?
Your time has started, Eric.
Thank you, and thank you, directors. AFSCME Local 444 objects to increasing the contracting out of our work by an additional $2.75 million for a total of $4 million to catch up with the purported backlog created during the 6 weeks we did not have sufficient PPE or protections in place to work safely during this pandemic. We can do this work better and cheaper than contracting it out, and I'm going to do a little bit of math, so you might want to get your pencils out. The district employs 8 paving crews, but 1 crew just does saw cuttings. So there are 7 crews that do street repairs with 7 people on each crew. That's 49 employees. Multiply that by the 30 days we were due to COVID, equates to 1,500 days of work. So if we hire 2 crews, it would take just 100 days to complete that missed work. 2 crews are 14 employees. Would take a roll-up cost of $150,000 a year, and you have $2.1 million. But remember, we only need them for 100 days. So 6 months is just over $1 million in labor costs, leaving $3 million for materials and equipment. There are currently 7 funded vacant positions in paving, a paving crew foreman, 2 heavy equipment operators, and 4 rakers. That's an entire crew in itself. And I think those vacancies existed before the pandemic and have yet to be filled. So they weren't getting that work done anyways. Pipeline was shut down, and the yards were doing minimal work, so no new work was being created during that time. There is an active hiring list for all of those positions. All HR needs to do is pick up the phone and ask them if they want a job. The testing has already been done. It's done the posting, testing, and have active hiring lists. They just pick up the phone and ask people if they want a job. Fill those vacancies and amend the position resolution to hire an additional 2 temporary construction crews. You could do that next board meeting and have these people onboarded within a month. This is our work, and we have legal recourse to protect our work through the MUD Act, Section 11188, which requires you to fill sufficient positions for the operation and maintenance of our system. By awarding this contract, you are making a finding that this work cannot be satisfactorily performed under civil service, and this is not true. In fact, we do the work better and at a lower cost. This is our work. We will not let it go. Please do not approve this award and instead insist management hire and fill a sufficient number of positions to complete this work. Thank you.
Thank you, Eric. Our next speaker.
The next speaker, Lewis, are you on the line?
Oh, yes, I am.
Okay, I'm going to start your time now. Go ahead.
Okay, thank you. Good afternoon to everyone. Again, my name is Lewis Bell, Baby Crew Foreman for East Bay MUD. I've been at the district for 29 years. In 19 of those years, I have been a Baby Crew Foreman. And we are experiencing a change in our management in the past couple of years with a different superintendent that has not been in paving, but he has his own direction as far as how he would like the work to be done. But as Eric stated, with our current staffing right now, there's 8 paving crews. Within those crews, we have at least 4 additional rakers sharing the saw cutting and also paving with those 8 crews. A lot of this work has not been managed because it's not talked about. We normally have weekly paving crew foreman meetings, and we always go over the extensions that we're able to do. That has not been done for a couple of months, and I don't know why. But that is the consensus with all paving foremen. Paving has not been managed. Talking about the backlog that we have has not been talked about. And so that is a major issue. It's not that we can't do the work, because we are available to do these extensions. Now, I must say we can't do them all, but there's a good portion that we can keep in-house and do ourselves. But it's not being managed by our supervision with us. And that is not a norm. This is so different right now. So permits, on average, throughout the district takes at least 30 days after it's been requested by the yards when it comes to services and main breaks. Pipeline is totally different because they get the permits ahead of time. But the big issue is that when it takes 30 days to get a permit request in our hands, and then we're given 60 to 90 days to do patch paving is what I'm speaking of. That gives us plenty enough time in between to do extensions. But all of this falls on how we're being managed by our supervisor, and he's going in a different direction, and we don't understand why. So like Eric, I do object to items 9A and B, and would really like for you guys to put a pause on this to get, you know, more information if need be. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Lewis. Are there any other speakers on this topic? All right. Hearing none, Clifford, I'll ask that you respond, and then we'll take questions from the board.
Sure. Let me just start this off. So historically, we have done the paving, striping, and sealing FM&O, although that dollar amount has historically only been used for striping and sealing, and we've been able to do all the paving work in-house. We came to the board this past January asking for $1.25 million to do this type of work, but at the time, of course, nobody knew about COVID. COVID happened, and the crews were down for 6 weeks, but there were some other activities going on in the cities that prevented us to do the work for about 8 weeks. So when you look at what we're asking for now, there's really three things that's driving this contract right now. Even though we did reduce a lot of the work that we did, we were still doing work out in the field, so we're developing a backlog of work that we have to make up. The second thing is there are two cities, Oakland and Berkeley, that were planning to do some paving work next year for East Bay Mud, and because of COVID, they decided not to move forward with those projects, and they've asked us to pave that work this year. And then the third thing is, because of all the safety precautions that we're taking out in the field, our crews are less efficient out in the field because of those precautions. And when you look at all those things, that's the reason why we got the $2.75 million. As to Eric's discussion about the vacancies, we do have seven vacancies right now, but the reality is only five of them were for the paving crews to fill the vacancies. Two of those positions were specifically designated for a saw cutting crew. It was a pilot that we had discussed with the board last year about doing a saw cutting pilot. And then as we fill those positions, when we looked at those existing lists, when we fill those positions, we will either exhaust or nearly exhaust those lists. So if we were to move forward and bring on additional crews, we would have to create a whole new list for many of those positions. So I will start there, and if there are any other questions or more detailed questions, I can have Dave Briggs answer.
All right. I'll call on Andy. I think you had your hand up first.
Thank you. I have some additional questions for Clifford. How much can one crew do? So if these five vacancies, and presumably we would need to flexibly staff two additional people from the hiring list were to be hired, when could they be hired, and then by when could they be trained to operate equipment?
As far as how long it will take them to hire, so the hiring process has slowed down because of COVID. After we fill the existing vacancies that we have for the positions for the paving crews, to bring on two new crews, we'd have to start a few new recruitments. That will take months to establish new lists.
So just to make sure I have an answer to my question, I'm trying to understand how much can we do how long will it actually take to make the hire occur?
Excuse me. Sorry, I didn't hear that last question, Director Katz.
There are a few parts to the question. I can break it down and make sure I get the answer. How long will it actually take to get the hiring off of the current list accomplished? So we already have a list.
Can you mute your microphone?
So for your first question, we do have existing vacancies to backfill positions for the existing crews. And those are being actively recruited. If we fill those positions right now with the existing list for the paving breakers, we would, assuming that everybody on that list accepts the position, we would exhaust that list entirely and we would have to do a new recruitment. There's another classification, the heavy equipment operator. If everybody accepted that, we still might have one or two positions left on that list that we could potentially use. But it's rare that everybody accepts off the list or is qualified to do that position. But assuming that were the case, we would still have to do a recruitment, and that would take months.
Okay. Do you estimate that there would be at least one paving crew filled from the two recruitments that are pending?
It would not make an entire paving crew.
Okay.
I'm sorry, Andy, can I just for clarification, so what I'm hearing is that even if you filled all the positions on the waiting list, that would not make another crew. It would not. There's still some missing positions that would.
Yeah, a typical paving crew has three paving rakers, two heavy equipment operators, two truck drivers, and a paving crew foreman. So those five positions, therefore, heavy equipment operators and paving rakers. And so those are the five positions that we have right now that we need to fill. We would still have to do recruitments for the other positions as well.
Thank you. And how many months will it take to reopen a recruitment and bring on board enough crews to start to work on our backlog?
I'm just looking to Laura Acosta. I think she signaled to me 3 to 7 months.
No.
Sorry, I can't read her hand. Three to 4 months, you're thinking?
Yes, 3 plus 4 is 7, so that makes some sense.
No, three, not seven months.
3 to 4 months is a understandable estimate. It does take some time, and I asked in the finance committee for our performance audit later to think about how we could contract that. But that actually does seem pretty good for government hiring. So I am now interested in how much of our work is urgent, how much of our work must be completed within 4 months without disruption to our local government partners or to regulatory compliance or other severe consequences. How much cannot wait for 4 months?
Let me have Dave Briggs speak to that. He's more familiar with the projects.
Good afternoon, Director Katz. So what we're really trying to do is get ahead of next winter. And there are stipulations for most of these permits that we pull when we do excavations in the street. There's the expectation that the work is done relatively quickly within several weeks. So the concern is that we won't get rid of the backlog before we approach next winter, and then we'll just get even further behind. So, a good portion of the work needs to get done before next winter. And I think this is the best mechanism we've been able to come up with.
Okay. I'd like, through the questioning, for my colleagues to somehow arrive at something a little more quantitative, because this has come up before, and I know that COVID was unexpected, but I also think that this goes without any bounds that help me really feel like we're making progress towards keeping our work in-house. So I'd like to learn about that some more through the questioning of my colleagues.
All right, Marguerite, I see you have your hand up. Does that mean you're back? And
I'm back, and I have a question.
Gavel? Okay.
But I could also take the gavel back as well. But
Frank was in the queue before you, so.
Yeah. Well, why don't you continue to manage this item? But I've got my hand up, so just
okay.
To be clear.
I'll call on Frank, and then you can take over. Frank, get unmute. I can't see. I just see the top of your head, so I don't know if you're actually talking.
Yeah.
But
there. Am I back?
Yeah.
And I'm going to let Marguerite go ahead of me. It's just that I wanted a little bit of clarity on the issue that while we're talking about this contracting out, the individual employees in these crews, none of them lost any pay during this period of time due to contracting out. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay, thank you. That's all I wanted to ask.
Marguerite.
Yeah, so my question is, and if this was covered earlier, I apologize, but as I understand it, a good bit of this work was work that we originally were not going to do, that the cities or other parties that we were coordinating with were actually had this on their calendar, and they basically went back on their agreement to do so, and so now we are obligated to do paving that was actually not on our schedule. Is my understanding that right, Clifford?
That's correct.
So, and all of this is related to COVID backlog, not other backlog. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay. Those are my questions.
All right. My questions were, so this is, you're asking for additional money. What part of the budget, where does that come from when we have to spend additional money for this?
I'll let Dave answer that question.
Mostly capital, but some of the patching is due to main breaks, so that would come out of operating. The main extensions would come off the capital side.
Okay, so it comes out of the capital side.
It comes out of both.
Uh-huh.
Depending on what it is.
And how does it work now? When do you decide that you use an outside contractor as opposed to our crews doing it? What's the decision on any particular job whether it gets done by a outside contractor or not?
So with respect to paving, that has historically, so about, you know, these are round numbers, but about 98% of the paving work has historically been done in-house. Because we had enough staff to take care of all the paving work. We came with this FMNO to do the striping and sealing, which we do not do inside. But we also use that money when the cities come and ask us to do joint paving projects. We use that same bucket of money to pay the cities to do the paving for us. So that is, in essence, some contracting out. But the cities have the right to tell us that they want to pave, and so we can't pave their streets if they want to pave it themselves. This is a circumstance that we're talking about right now where the cities had agreed to do it, but again, next year, so our authorization is through January of 2021. They were going to do two projects, fairly large projects, one in Oakland and one in Berkeley. Next year, they have now said they don't want to do it because of COVID and asked us to do that paving this year. So that's why we need the money for this year to do that paving work.
All right, again, to get clarity, maybe to pile on Marguerite's question before. So really, most of this money is to make up for what the two cities said they were going to do but now are requiring us to do. Does that seem right?
That's right. So the estimate to do the work in both Oakland and Berkeley, that total is around $1.5 million of the $2.75 million.
Okay. Any other questions?
And then the rest is just work that we couldn't do, that we're behind on because of COVID.
So the rest of it is ostensibly for the 6 to 8 weeks where we were shut down. Even though we were doing less work, there was still work being built up because we didn't stop our work completely. So that backlog has to be right. Taken care of.
And this is FMNO, so this is an authorization to use up to that amount, but we could, if our district forces are doing better, if our recruitment proceeds apace, and we as we often do better than what we've set as our target or what we're planning for, we could end up doing some of this. Do you have an estimate or a thought about what the range is of what our crews might end up doing and not use all of this? Or
So we did take a look at that. And, yeah, we did take a look, and if the cities would allow us to do overtime work, which, again, the cities have to agree for us to work either on a weekend or longer hours, we might be able to shave 10 to 20% off of that dollar amount. So you're correct, President Young, that this is an authorization to spend. It doesn't mean that we have to spend it. If we can do it in-house, we will do it in-house.
All right. Lisa, it seemed like you were maybe having a question.
Yeah, I had a lot of the same questions, and I think they've been answered. So in short, this is piggybacking on Marguerite's last comment or question about whether or not more of our staff will be able to participate in this work if things go our way. I think that's what Clifford said.
Correct.
Okay. So I want to ask, I have a couple other questions with regard to vacancies. Often hear the issue of staff vacancies come up often, whether it's from the engineers, electrical engineers, or in this case, just trying to get a better handle on it. Is the so what you're saying right now is that, you know, even if we filled the vacancies with people who are currently on the list qualified for this, we wouldn't have enough because we need we don't have people on a list for truck drivers. But is there? Do we usually wait until there's people waiting on all those lists to fill a crew, or would we make hires and that? And if so, why haven't we filled those vacancies that we do have so far? If you could just, you know, use this as a teachable moment on this particular situation and vacancies and how they're filled and in what order and stuff would be great.
So when we do have vacancies, we do try to fill those as quickly as possible. And just because we have an eligible list, when we do the interviews, they may not be qualified or they may decline an offer. As far as the positions, the paving breaker position is one that we do keep open continuously for people to apply. The other ones, we start the recruitment depending on if there's a vacancy. But as we look at the vacancies, I mean, there's going to be many people on the list so that if other vacancies open up, many people can potentially test for it. And then if there are qualified people, we can hire off the list. But if there is no list that exists, we do have to have a vacancy for most of the positions to generate the recruitment process, start the recruitment process. And the reason for that is you don't want to do recruitment without a vacancy. Then you have a bunch of people who've interviewed for a position and we have no job to offer them. And then they wonder why they went through that whole process in the first place.
Right. That's helpful. So it seems to me that there's kind of two choices, approve or not approve. If we approve this, there's still the option for staff to fill these positions as quickly as possible, to juggle things around, to do some overtime, to try and, you know, do whatever they can to keep from using this contract or these additional contractors. Or we can refuse this at this point or vote it down, in which case, you know, telling the staff to do what you can, perhaps come back to us when things are more urgent or something in that way, if I'm framing this correctly. Clifford, do you have anything to add to kind of that juxtaposition?
Yeah, I will add that, again, this is just the authorization to spend the money. I mean, we will absolutely commit to meeting with the unions and discussing this to see what we can do with staff before we spend a dollar on this additional authorization. But with the recognition that there is a pretty significant backlog that was generated by COVID, so it's unlikely that the district will be able to do, district forces will be able to do all this work.
And with that, so I would just say one more thing in that, and maybe I've thrown off again by that interruption, but
I
think
muted.
In those circumstances where cities are otherwise expecting us to meet certain deadlines, to repave the streets where we've done work and stuff like that, I would kind of hope that they would also be lenient in understanding the challenges that COVID has brought, perhaps even, you know, the fact that streets are used a little bit less during this period, and that in any case, we try to be as aggressive as possible in finding ways to keep our district crews busy, to do this work in-house as much as possible, and to save as much money as we can by not contracting out.
So I have one more point to add, which I meant to bring up, which is, oh, crap, and here, I got to take, I'm going to, hang on, let me call you right back, okay, right back. Okay, my understanding is that the Oakland project is in West Oakland.
That's correct.
And if this project were on the Piedmont border, I am guessing that we'd be hearing from a lot of folk about it. And I, for one, just because we might not hear from West Oakland doesn't mean that we shouldn't be attending to one of the planks in our racial justice resolution that we passed less than a month ago, this work should get done. And it didn't get done because of COVID. Our folks got paid. They didn't lose work. I would like to see us do as much of this work as we can, but I'm not willing to have bad streets and that we made plague neighborhoods that are already crap. So in terms of their streets, so I don't want to contribute to making that worse. And I'll leave it at that. So I'll make a motion that we approve the FMNO with the proviso that we work to create as much of this work getting done by our district forces as possible.
I'll second.
All right, I have a motion and second. Is that any further discussion? All right, well then I will ask Risha to call roll call vote.
Give me one moment.
And this is on item.
Participant lines unmuted.
9A and B.
9A and B together. Is that right?
Risha, could I ask that you call me first so that I have to get back into this matter that I've been dealing with?
Yes, I just want to make a comment. I was trying to unmute the public comment line to see if there were any additional comments, and somebody has their district phone on hold, and so we just hear music. So if there is anybody who needed to comment before the board voted, they're not being allowed to because I hear hold music playing. So I just wanted to make that note.
All right. Okay. I'm glad we were able to hear from the two speakers before the hold music came on.
Okay. So roll call vote. President Young?
Yes.
Director Coleman?
Yes.
Katz?
Yes.
Lenny?
Yes.
McIntosh?
Yes.
Mellon?
Yes.
And Director Patterson?
Yes.
All right, passes unanimously. So we're on to item 12.
The Frank Mellon item.
Do you have something to say? I'll call
it. Yeah, just a quick word, and I will turn it over to Clifford. It's Andrea Miller's purposes. This isn't because of anything other than when we're approving an item that is a position appointment like this, I think it merits more than just a consent calendar note, and that it should be voted on separately. And with that, I yield the floor to Clifford for additional points that he'd like to make.
Yes, so we are very excited to have you consider the appointment of Andrea Miller. She comes from the city of Pinole. She was the director of finance for the Pinole, and prior to that, she was the assistant director of finance for the city of Pleasanton. So, and she has a bachelor's of art degree in human development with a minor in business administration from Cal State East Bay, although I'm sure her diploma says Cal State Hayward, and a master's degree in public administration from Golden Gate University.
With that, I would move acceptance of the recommendation.
All right.
Second.
I've got a motion and a second for approval of item 12. Can we have a roll call vote?
Yes. Directors Coleman?
Yes.
Katz?
Yes.
Lenny?
Yes.
McIntosh?
Yes.
Mellon?
Yes.
Patterson?
I'm back.
Yes.
And President Young?
Yes.
All right. I'll just finish this item and ask Andrea if you'd like to say a few words. Welcome.
Yes, thank you, Board of Directors. As it's already been stated, I'm Andrea Miller, and I'm really excited. Thank you for this opportunity to serve as the controller for East Bay MUD. I'm looking forward to getting started, going to work, and working with staff to carry out the goals of the district. And again, thank you.
Welcome aboard, Andrea.
Yes.
Great to have you on board.
You're welcome.
I know you have good news to go, right?
All right.
All right, Marguerite, I'll turn it back over to you.
Okay, hopefully that is the end of my interruptions today. Sorry.
Well, we have pilot, co-pilot.
That's right. Okay, we do have, where am I? We did our consent calendar. We are now going to have a public hearing. On item 13.1 is a public hearing. This is a public hearing to consider objections and protests to the general manager's report to transfer delinquent East Bay MUD charges to the 2021 property tax rolls.
We can't.
If there is anyone on the line regarding this item, you may contact staff at. Number, I'll repeat this twice.
President Young, can I interrupt you for one moment? Give me one moment.
Okay.
Whoever is on the phone and they have their phone on hold, please hang up or please disconnect your line.
Okay.
So we have.
I mean, the person that has us on hold can't hear that
they
we're
can't
on hold.
Hear us. I have to leave it open because this is the public comment line. We have no. Hold on, let me check. You can go ahead and continue, and hopefully the public can hear over this and speak up if they have comment.
Okay.
Really, we cannot hear over it, Risha. I can hear you, but I cannot hear Marguerite.
Okay.
Can you hear me now?
No, they can't hear you.
Everybody can ask them to call back in or something?
I think you should tell, yes, exactly. I think you should tell everybody that's listening on to call back.
If there is anybody on the line and you wish to speak under public comment on the public hearing portion of this meeting, please hang up and call back. And we're going to clear the line. So give me one moment, President Young.
We'll just wait for a few minutes. Okay, and fortunate timing.
Give me 1 minute. Let me get the phone line back up.
You think they'd have this figured out by now.
Can you call Robin and ask her to log in phone? Call Kareem and tell her to log in.
Welcome to the conferencing center. Please enter your PIN code, followed by the pound key.
Robin.
Sorry, the PIN code 95925 1 is incorrect. Please try again. Sorry, the PIN code 95925 1 is incorrect. Please try again. Please contact your moderator for assistance. Welcome to the conferencing center. Please enter your PIN code followed by the pound key. Your call has been placed in conference.
I'm back. Okay, we're back on. So, President Young, are you still there?
Oh, dear.
Can you mute it back?
Okay. She muted the line. Okay, thank you, Robin.
It doesn't.
She found a number, and she had just unmuted it just to make sure, and that was the one.
She muted the
and
phone.
And she just muted it back.
Thank you. Okay, we're ready. President Young, we're ready.
I'm sorry.
You had to step away.
All right. So this is a public hearing to consider objections and protests to the general manager's report to transfer delinquent East Bay MUD charges to the 2021 property tax rolls. If there's anyone on the line regarding this item, please call staff, or you can contact staff at 510-287-0612 to help you with making payment arrangements and information related to delinquent charges. Is there anyone on the line that wishes to object or protest the actions being considered by the board? Please identify yourself.
Is there anyone on the public comment line who wishes to object or protest to the items listed on the agenda under item number 13? President Young, there are none.
Okay, then at this point, we will close the public hearing and move on to item 13.2. which is, I will ask for a motion to adopt general manager's report to transfer these charges to the property tax roll.
So moved.
I'll move the item. I'll second the item, John.
Okay, we need a roll call vote. Is any discussion?
No discussion.
Okay, we need a roll call vote.
Directors Coleman?
Yes.
Katz?
Yes.
Lenny?
Yes.
McIntosh?
Yes.
Mellon?
Yes.
Patterson?
Yes.
President Young?
Yes.
Great.
Okay, we'll now move on to determination and discussion. General Manager's report.
I'm sorry.
We need to approve the financing plan for FY 2021, and we have Travis George presenting.
Yes, so we did present the FY 21 proposed financing plan at the Finance Administration Committee meeting. And if the board would like, we can share that presentation before you consider the item. Would you like to hear the presentation?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
I'm sorry, I had my mute on. I was also saying yes.
Okay. Travis, you're up.
Okay. Good afternoon, everyone. Let me see if I can get control of the slides.
She's getting it. Give her 1 minute.
Okay.
Almost.
All right. There we go. Okay. So this is the FY21 financing plan. I'll start with just a little bit of background and just for your reference about our debt portfolio and credit ratings. I'll give you an overview of what we did in FY20 and then talk about what we propose to do in FY21. So the district's debt portfolio, really, the composition of it really hasn't changed much in recent years. There's about $2.8 billion outstanding on the water system and about $369 million outstanding on the wastewater side. As you can see from these pie charts, the vast majority of the debt outstanding is in the form of fixed rate revenue bonds, particularly for wastewater that makes up almost all of it. There's a small sliver you'll see there of commercial paper. The portion on the water side of commercial paper is a little bit more, a little just over 12%. Additionally, you'll see the purple slice of the pie at 3.8% is what we call here synthetic fixed rate revenue bonds. Those are really what is called variable rate demand bonds that are tied to swaps, and the swaps essentially synthetically fix that rate that we pay for the district. So that's why they're called synthetic fixed rate revenue bonds. The other little sliver here, the red sliver, 1.3% of the portfolio is made up of state revolving fund loans, two of which we just recently added and actually got the money from the state during this fiscal year, which we'll talk about in a couple slides. Some more background, just our credit ratings remain strong. They haven't changed, they didn't change in FY20. The last change that was made was in FY19 when Moody's increased, upgraded the wastewater rating from AA2 to AA1, where you see it now, which is equal to the water rating. All of these ratings are very good, very high. It's sort of hard to tell because each rating agency has their own scale that they use, but essentially S&P at AAA for both water and wastewater is the highest rating they have. And then Moody's and Fitch, although they look different on here, they're both just the second highest rating that those agencies offer. So just one below AAA, which would be the highest for those two companies as well. So last year, the biggest thing that we did was to renew and extend two liquidity facilities. These agreements that we make with banks, and in this case, we made them with Sumitomo Mitsui Banking Corporation, which is abbreviated here SMBC, and also Wells Fargo. We had one with that we extended. These agreements basically are in place in order to kind of protect the district in the very unlikely case that some of our variable rate debt, either commercial paper or variable rate bonds, were unable to be remarketed. I'm sure you'll remember, essentially both of those types of debt are resold and come due and then are resold every between every week, or could be a week, could be 30 days or 90 days, depending on the portion of the debt we're talking about. But essentially periodically they're resold, and so to do that we need investors out there. And so in a very unlikely case we might not be able to find an investor, which is why these agreements are in place, which makes gives us certainty that someone is there to buy them. And in this case it would be these banks. They would be there to buy this amount of debt, or up to this amount of debt, if that debt wasn't able to be resold. One thing I'll point out here, the proposed size of issuance of the SMBC commercial paper line was $200 million, and the actual size of that agreement was $176 million, so, which is a good thing. We pay on these agreements based on the size of them, and so having a smaller amount is good, and we were able to do that because specifically we paid down $24 million of the water side CP in FY20. As a result of strong financial results from FY19, and we also did the same on the water, or on the wastewater side, we paid down $5 million. We didn't issue any new money revenue bonds during FY20, and we also didn't issue any refunding bonds. The last thing I'll mention on this slide, though, number three, we did actually finally draw down on the SRF loans that we applied and were approved for in the last couple of years. And essentially the way these work is that you have to build the project first and expend the money, and then you get reimbursed by the state through these loans. And so since we finished two projects that we applied for two loans for, we were able to pull out the $26 million in that far right column. It's a bit less than the $37 million in the proposed size, which is the amount that the agreements were made for, mostly because you're allowed to put kind of a big contingency in there in case things go awry. So anyway, the projects came in at or under the expected cost, and so we those loans are smaller than they would have otherwise been. So just a brief overview of what we intend or propose to do in this fiscal year, and I'll talk more about it on the next slide, but in terms of new additional new money revenue bonds, we are proposing up to $160 million for the water side, and we don't think we'll need any for the wastewater side. We are in the process, and I hope that at the end of the process, of pursuing another state revolving fund loan, this time on the wastewater side. And I think we're at the in the final stages of that process. That's hard to say for sure. And then we are also, for the first time, in the initial stages of applying for a WIFIA loan, which is a different subsidized loan program. This one is through managed by the EPA, so it's a fully federal program. And so we'll see where that goes. We're in the process of preparing the very first element of the application. And we will be back to you to inform you of additional information as that process moves along. And then we'll, as always, continue to monitor the market and make sure that we are ready to move on any opportunities to refund existing debt to achieve debt service savings. So basically, the financial results being so strong in FY19 and FY20 reduced the overall need for debt to fund our capital projects. It doesn't mean that we don't need any, but or we won't need any. So we are saying that we could issue up to $160 million in FY21, but we didn't need any and need to issue in FY20. So we were in a good financial position and didn't need to issue additional debt. In the end, it may be the case for FY21 that we can issue less than $160 million. Perhaps we could even wait to issue until the following fiscal year. But the eventual size and timing of that issuance, if there is one, will obviously depend most importantly on the severity of the impact of the pandemic, and so that will be an ongoing thing. I can say that I think that we won't need to issue debt during the first half of this fiscal year. So if we do issue any debt, whether it's $160 million or some amount less than that, it would be toward the end of the fiscal year, most likely, definitely in the second half. And again, we don't expect that the wastewater system will need to issue any additional new money bonds. And then I already touched on the state revolving fund and WIFIA loans. And again, we'll inform you as new information, as we have new information about both of those. So our recommendation is simply to approve this financing plan, and I'm happy to answer any questions that anyone has.
Any questions from board members? Any report from the Finance Committee?
Yes, the Finance Committee heard this item this morning and unanimously approved it for forwarding to the full board.
Okay, good work on continuing to whittle down those swaps. And good news on the state and federal loan grant things, grant funds, sorry. Anyone else? Any public comment on this item?
I would move the item.
Do you have a second?
Second.
Sure. Risha, can you open the line to see if there's any public comment, please?
I believe it's open. Give me one moment.
Participant line's muted. Participant lines unmuted.
Is there anyone on the line for public comment on item number 14? There is none.
Okay, then we will move forward with a roll call vote.
Directors Coleman?
Yes.
Katz?
Yes.
Lenny?
Yes.
McIntosh?
Yes.
Mellon?
Yes.
Patterson?
Yes.
President Young?
Yes. All righty. Moving right along to the item 15. Thank you, Travis. The general manager's report. Clifford?
Yes. Dave Briggs, the acting director of operations and maintenance, is going to provide an update on our COVID-19 response.
Good afternoon, President Young. Good afternoon, members of the board. I'll get right into the update here. Janetta, do you want me to control it from the podium? Thank you. And so, as usual, we'll cover a broad variety of topics, and we're going to start off with the impact to customers. So we're on slide 2. There's two sets of figures on this slide. The leftmost set are our most recent numbers, and on the right side are numbers that the board may have seen about a month ago, so you can have those both there for comparison. So services still in need of restoration is down to 6. Those are most likely vacant properties. Payment plans and extensions have been granted to almost 7,200 accounts. Late fees have been waived to over 2,600 accounts. And 48-hour notices have been withheld to almost 40,000 accounts. We don't use 48-hour notices at this point, as the board is aware, with the moratorium on shutoffs. I think those are termed payment reminders. But once account holders, customers get those notices, some form of payment usually occurs. But that being said, we have 7,200 accounts with no submitted payments whatsoever, which amounts to about $6.2 million outstanding. The good news is that number is relatively constant and has been relatively constant for the past month. It's about double what it normally is, but it has been steady for the past month. CAP enrollment is up about 15% since March, over 7,800 at this point. So now we're at slide 3, looking at our water demand, and this chart pops up over various board meetings, and it's consistently been the same. The black line shows water production for this calendar year, and it's contrasted against water production in blue from last year. And aside from hydrology and precipitation and meteorological periods, the lines are by and large the same, although we have been producing a few MGD above last year. And in the springtime, when we saw the height of the shelter in place with most businesses shuttered and construction shut down and the freeways empty, we did see some shift from commercial industrial into residential. But as we've gone into the summer and most businesses are back up at some level, we're no longer seeing a difference in the historic proportionality among those customer classes. So by and large, we're seeing a normal demand pattern within the service area at this point. Although, that being said, July is tracking a little bit above last year for July for the same period. So the management team and the emergency operations team have been very busy, as you know, over the past few months, trying to keep things rolling here and trying to keep employees safe. And a big part of that is training. We've spent a lot of time educating employees on ways to maintain social distancing and what the new protocols are. We have redoubled our efforts over the past couple of weeks to get out a very clear, straightforward instructions for face coverings. By and large, they're required at work, period. There are exceptions for interior workspaces such as this building. There are exceptions outside for a field crew, but by and large, you need to have one on. We're also working, looking at alternative work schedules to stagger start times so that employees can stay away from each other and we can avoid gatherings. So one of the more effective things we're doing in the service yards is starting, the start times are staggered by about 15 minutes. So crews and personnel roll into the yard, They don't all hit the locker room at the same time. They don't all hit the gas pump. They don't all hit places where they're picking up and dropping off materials at the same time. So the sort of rolling start time has really helped keep people separated. The interior building modifications are largely done. I think a couple of meetings ago we showed you slides of various plexiglass alterations we're making to keep people more distant, and those are by and large completed at this point. I think everything will be completed by the middle of August. And maintaining crew composition is a big deal. We want to keep people together that are normally working together, and so we're actively talking to Local 21 and Local 444 about ways we can do this, where without impacting employees greatly and without impacting work, it is very challenging to keep the same crews intact every day, but we're looking at any way we can to minimize the mingling of staff. Our personal protective equipment, we have re-examined our usage rates just in the last week, and our estimate now is that the PPE, that in conjunction with additional purchases, our new estimate for PPE in stock is up to 10 weeks. We are exploring ways of stretching that to 12. That may require more storage space, but we are looking into that. Public safety power shutoffs are going to happen, most likely in the fall. We've had a nice, cool July. The two-week forecast does not look too intimidating, so nothing's imminent. But we are preparing for that, and mostly what we're doing at the EOT level is we're looking forward to a way that we would change the composition of the EOT so we could quickly adapt to dealing with this long marathon pandemic emergency combined with a very short, intense duration PSPS event. And so we'll be ready for that so we could jump to a new formation, so to speak, when that comes up, most likely after Labor Day. Telecommuting remains extensive, no changes there, and although largely an academic point, we have canceled district-wide travel through Labor Day weekend, although nothing's planned or no one's hosting anything anyway, so it's sort of a an academic point at this point. Looking at our infection management, this slide is already out of date. We had 10 positives through yesterday. We heard about a 11th a couple of hours ago. It is the first positive we've had upcountry with a part-time employee. We've also had one contractor test positive. We know through contact tracing and employee interviews and a lot of the good work that Laura's people are doing, we know that by and large the infections are coming from the outside and not transmitted at work. And we also know that when employees follow the rules, when they stay away from each other, when we do restructure our work to keep people working as single individuals as much as possible, we know that we have a very good track record for stopping the spread of the virus when it does get to the workplace. We have a good track record of doing that so far, but it does rely on employees all participating. We've had a relatively good last 7 to 10 days, but we did pick up our 11th positive just this morning. Let's see, we have added staff to support our caseload management within HR to make sure that we're ready. And our newest feature is that we have a hotline that we've just made available for employees. It's a single number that you can call. Any questions related to COVID, symptoms, general questions about leave, options available to you, that's now ready. It sort of helps both ways. Not only does it help employees, because it's very straightforward, it's a consistent number, but it also helps on the HR side, because if the caseload is too busy for one person, the hotline will route it automatically to whoever does have time to handle a new case. And then finally, we are tracking lost time to make sure we can gauge the impact of the pandemic on the district. And there's any number of metrics that we could use. The one that we're using right now is sort of an aggregate metric that adds up employees who may be home and symptomatic, employees waiting for a doctor consultation or a result, employees who are under quarantine or isolation. All of these reasons are reasons why they are not at work helping and contributing, and this does account for those that are able to telecommute, of course. So those that are not able to contribute for a COVID-related reason, that's a number that we want to keep track of. We aren't seeing any spiking recently. We have seen elevated numbers, certainly in the summer compared to the spring, but no spiking, and We have, things have been relatively stable for the past couple weeks now. The last item I'll just mention is that we know what is coming with the school year and all the challenges that could be out there with parents. And we have a management team meeting tomorrow to discuss options that we're trying to explore to make this easier for employees who are going to be challenged by this in their home circumstances. So we hope to vet that at the SMT level tomorrow morning, and then with what viable options are remain after that meeting, we'll share with the unions on Thursday. So that's my report. I'll be happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Dave. Are there questions from the board? Or comments from the board?
This is John. I just have one quick question. With the schools resuming, and Dave alluded to it, a lot of the districts are not going to start an operation. So I assume we're doing the planning for the those employees who need to take care of work from home and also take care of a child or children.
Director Coleman, your question is how is the district going to accommodate those that have elevated child care issues with the distance learning? That's your question?
Yes.
So that's exactly the nature of the conversation tomorrow morning, is we're going to explore what we can do. We don't have a panacea, but there are a few things we could do, such as flexible schedules. We have kicked around the ability to help tutor or create a platform where people could exchange availability of tutoring services and tutoring needs. So that's another thing that we will discuss. And there are a few other ideas in the bin. Obviously, those that are telecommuting have a certain level of challenge, and those that are out in the field have an even greater challenge. So we're trying to create some options that might be available to all employees. One version of a flexible schedule that could help people in the field is if we went to, and we haven't fleshed this out and don't know how viable it is, but if we went to a 4-10 schedule, so 4 work days at 10 hours, combined with Saturday-Sunday work, that actually could free up a Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, which is a heck of a lot better than not freeing up anything. So we're gonna really get resourceful, I think, tomorrow morning.
Great. Glad to hear you're thinking creatively about ways to accommodate this thing that basically everybody in California, at least, is dealing with. And thank you for the continued attention to ways to, modify and adjust and evolve and adapt, our scheduling. I guess there's some good news coming out in the latest science reports about surface contamination not being a real risk factor, and that certainly is good news for all of us as well. And let's hope that none of the employees that have fallen ill or family members that have fallen ill are experiencing bad illness. Or if I could knock on wood, I don't have any nearby. Hope that the story in East Bay Mud continues to be one where we're not experiencing the tragedy of this disease. Is there any more, Clifford, that you need to talk to us about?
No, that is it.
I'm sorry, you kind of broke up.
No, that's it for the COVID report.
Okay, and anything else on Jer's side?
Nothing else.
Okay. We are, we'll now move on to reports and director comments. Item 16, you should have minutes from the July 14th Planning Committee and the Ledge HR Committee meetings. We will now move to getting a report from what I heard was a lengthy Sustainability and Energy Committee meeting this morning, and the Finance Administration Committee. Doug, do you have the report from the Sustainability and Energy Committee?
Yeah, I'm just looking for the four items, but I'll anyway. We had a of course our committee always has some very important things that we need to weigh, and sometimes we run over. I apologize that to the members of the Finance Committee. But we covered four items, including managing fleet emissions, got an update on that, an update on our vehicle charging pilot program at the wastewater treatment plant, very excited about that, a report on a possible funding opportunity with regard to the biogas to hydrogen conversion, that's a possibility. And finally, had a report and discussion about the energy policy update. I will report out that we had a, it was at the urging of the committee 3-0 vote that we moved forward more quickly than the staff recommendation on a achieving a goal of zero net carbon emissions or zero net greenhouse gas emissions by the year 2030. And so that may be coming back to the Finance Committee and presumably to the rest of the board at some point sooner than later this year. So we're greatly encouraged by the progress that the staff has made. This was with regard to, I think, especially the water side of things, emissions. As you know, the wastewater side is more complicated, but anyway, I'm very encouraged by that and anxious to see us take that leadership mantle to the highest level. And that's the report.
Great. Look forward to hearing more about all of those. Next up, Director Patterson, do you have a report from the Finance Committee?
Yes, Madam President. The Finance Committee met this morning. It approved the monthly investment transactions, the quarterly financial reports, and there was a report presented by Barry Gordon, our internal auditor, and there's a proposed change in there, which comes down on item five as well, the debt management and revisions to policy in terms of our cash reserve. The proposed fiscal year budget for 2021, you approved that earlier. That was recommended by the full board. And pretty much that brings us up to date. I think our finances seem to be in very good shape. It's too bad that these approvals can't be linked with the speed and deliverance of getting staff on board to fill the positions, so we don't have the contracting out controversy. But I think that was well covered earlier today, and I think we're moving on with good steam. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Director Patterson. Moving on to item 17, other items for future consideration. Sounds like the energy matter from the Sustainability Committee or goal from the Sustainability Committee may be hopping back to finance before it comes to the full board. And if you have any other items for future consideration, please do submit them to the general manager. And now on to item 18, director comments. I have one, which is, don't forget that Friday is the deadline for FPPC reports.
Right, right.
Margaret, this is John.
Mark,
go ahead.
I have Frank
go
first, ahead, and then I'll take you, John. Either way.
No, I don't have a hand motion. Go, Frank. Go for it.
We do have
I was going to request if we could close this when we close the meeting today, Marguerite. We yep, can do it yep. in recognition of John Lewis, representative, who was such a vital part of the civil rights movement back when I was still a kid. So he was a true giant, and I think it would do us well to recognize him.
Madam President, I would join with those remarks by my fellow board member, Frank, and also just attribute that these are very, very historical times. And last week and earlier this week, there have been several historical reviews of the civil rights movement of the 60s. And some comparative to today. I just wanted to call your attention to that and note that, for the record, I was very involved in the struggle, saw many of the things that happened in those transactions that came across. You know, it brought tears in my eyes to see young people, particularly those college students, who were actually killed, and really see the transmission toward today. I'm heartily inspired by what I see in some of the action for justice, because it involves young people. And it means that we have a bit of a big carried by young people in the current generations, and in the scheme of things, hopefully their offspring will move forward. I just categorized the wording of the old days. The oppressed cannot change oppression. It is only the ones who oppress people who can change it. The oppressed have to suffer it. I see hope now in my time that we will see that change. I also want to comment on some of my old steads in the city of Oakland, both Children's Fairyland and the Oakland Zoo, which I once directed, are seeking to rebound from financial crises. And it's good to see them make that comeback. I've been part of the transition that made them sound physically. And, of course, if they don't get visitors or they're not allowed to see people coming through the gate, their operations are in trouble. I'm not anxious about COVID spreading, but with proper distances, using the protocols, I'm convinced that these two entities can survive the COVID epidemic and their financial positioning. Thank you, Madam President.
Thank you, Director Patterson, as always, for your historical perspective on many things, and especially your engagement and leadership in the civil rights movement and in the progress of Oakland in rising up to its to itself and to being all that it can be. Any other direct... John, you had a comment.
Yeah, I just had a... we did have our UMRA meeting on Friday, and Bill Patterson did join in as well. I just want to make sure that I had asked in the past, and was part of the UMRA agenda, the Stern legislation, Senator Stern and Assemblyman Quirk. And we did take action contingent on the agencies up there supporting it also. But if there's legislation that is pertinent to UMRA or our member partners up there, they would get it sent to them as soon as possible, because they really didn't really look at it until the UMRA board meeting. And with the tight legislative calendar, sometimes it's important to get it to them sooner than later. So I would just ask that we make sure we have a diligent effort to
on those types of bills that we get it up to them as soon as possible. That's all.
So would that just be Marlene getting it to Richard?
I don't know if it's Marlene or if it's Mike, whoever, but somebody needs to get it to Richard, yes.
We'll work on that.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Any other director comments? Okay, well, we will adjourn in memory and recognition of the amazing life and works of John Lewis, and in his spirit, we will do better, and we will
hear.
Do good trouble. So with that, we are adjourned.